All right, lawyer talk off the record, on the air. Sometimes I talk about big picture stuff. I just did one on free speech and fighting words and time, place, and manner. We did all that, and sometimes I do something more specific. But you know what comes up a lot, and this happened to me yesterday. By the way, I am a criminal defense attorney. I represent folks charged with crimes, good, bad, or ugly, like it or not. That's what I do for a living. And part and parcel with that, and this came up yesterday or the day before, when you do this job, it all blurs together. But anyway, my client was pleading guilty to something. And that meant that we had negotiated an outcome of a case, a resolution of a case. There was a plea. There was a negotiated plea bargain, and my client was entering a guilty plea. And it dawned on me as I sat down with my client in advance the day before and talked to him about how this was going to work, what it meant, and answered my client's questions. That has become routine for me, but I don't think it's routine for a lot of lawyers. And I think a lot of times I see people in court go through this colloquy, they call it, where they plead guilty or even no contest to something. And it just happens like that. It's all this procedure. It's getting mixed around and nobody quite understands it. So I'm going to break it down. Like it or not, I'm going to break it down right here. And I'm going to have the discussion with you that I have with a client or a client who's proposing to plead guilty about what it means. So here's the big picture. First, before you plead guilty, you have to understand what the maximum, let me go even broader. It has to be done knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily. Now, those are buzzwords. Those are constitutional buzzwords. That means that if it's going to be consistent with due process, you have to understand what you're doing knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily. That means you know what's going on. That means you have all the facts necessary to make the decision, and that nobody is forcing you to do it. In other words, you're not getting arm twisted. There's no backdoor threats. There's no, hey, you better plead guilty or else. You have to understand it. It has to be knowing, intelligent, voluntary. Now, what does that mean? First, that means that you can't be. It can't be coerced. In other words, I can't be saying you better plead guilty or else this. Now, you might be thinking, well, isn't it always sort of coerced? Because if you plead guilty, there's always a reason you're pleading guilty. And it might be just to avoid the risk of a trial. It might be because you're actually guilty. It might be because you're getting a plea bargain. It might be because in the case I'm talking about, somebody was charged with a certain level of misdemeanor. And because of the plea bargain, it got dropped all the way down to the lowest level of misdemeanor. So isn't that a reason, right? So yes, it is, but it's written down. So a plea agreement is like a contract. And in Ohio, we have criminal rules, and under the criminal rules, we write down what the deal is. So there's a piece of paper, and on the piece of paper, it says you're pleading guilty to X. And as a result of this, here's what can happen to you. So those are the terms of the deal. So typically what happens is the colloquy would go like this. You're not coerced into doing this, and there are no threats or other promises aside from what is written on the page here, aside from the terms of the deal itself. So nothing outside. There's no backdoor stuff. There's nobody saying behind the scenes, unless you plead guilty, we're going to do this. I'm trying to think of scenarios where that has happened anyway. There probably are, but generally that's the question. So you're not getting arm twisted into it. There's no threat of force. There's no anything else. One, you know what you're doing. And two, there's no threats. Now let's go back to one for a second. Do you know what you're doing? The next phase of this is that I would spend time talking with my clients about, do you understand what's going on? You're pleading guilty to this offense. Here's what this offense means. It means that you were knowingly causing or attempting to cause physical harm to somebody else. That would be an assault in Ohio as opposed to, say, a felonious assault in Ohio. So now it's a misdemeanor. Then I would go through the elements of that offense with my client. I would say, here's what this means. And then I would say, here's the deal. We could go fight this in court. Here are the defenses that we might have. Here are why they're probably not going to work. Here's what the evidence is against you. Here's what we have. In other words, this knowing and intelligently means that the client understands what the deal is, understands what the terms of the deal, and understands why they're doing it. And this is where it's important for me to sit down with my client before the plea and sort of explain this. And it starts at the time they call me. They call me and they hire me and we talk about the case. I go through the facts of the case. I go through the law of the case with them. We get discovery or information from the prosecutors about what the evidence is against my client. We even do our own investigative workup. We have meetings about it. We have discussions about it. We talk about it. And at the end of all that process, we get to the point where there's a plea bargain offered. Maybe it's on the night before jury trial, we get an offer. Maybe it's weeks before. I don't know. But usually by the time that happens, I have had a lot of conversations with my client and they understand what the evidence is. I've forced them, or I've at least shared the discovery with them. I can't force somebody to read it, but my client should, they have access to everything that they're allowed to have access to. And I've answered all their questions about it. So when I get to that conversation, I can say, yeah, you understand what the defenses are. And you know, here's where the attorney-client relationship often goes awry. You have lawyers who don't have those conversations. Maybe they're doing all the work. Maybe the lawyer understands it. Maybe he has every good reason to recommend the client take the plea. But if he hasn't had those conversations with the client doesn't understand it. And then when you get to the plea, sometimes it breaks down. And I'll tell you how in a second. But that's sort of the intelligently, the knowingly, intelligently part of it. You understand what the deal is. Another part of that is, what are the maximum punishments? What can happen to you if you plead guilty? So in the assault case I talked about, that would be 6 months in jail, $1,000 fine, or that's the maximum. Now here's what trips people up a lot too. You write on the paper and it says you're pleading guilty to misdemeanor assault in Ohio. Maximum possible punishment is 6 months in jail, $1,000 fine. Client looks at me and says, what the heck? You told me I was getting probation, or I had a chance at probation. Yes, you still do. This is just the maximum. And in our forms, in our colloquy, in most, we don't talk about what the minimums are or what we think the judge might do. We talk about what the maximum is. And that means you have to understand in the worst case scenario what can happen to you. The other thing you have to understand is, no matter what we are telling the judge, a lot of times there are something called recommendations. There are different types of recommendations. You can have recommendations of the parties that bind the court. Federal court has this. It's called a binding plea agreement. You have other type of recommendations in Ohio where if both parties, the prosecutor and the defense, look at a judge and say, judge, we recommend that you give my client straight probation or maybe only a fine. We don't want any jail. We don't think it's appropriate. We've talked about the case. We know about the case. We're just recommending what you do. Judge says, yeah, I'll consider that recommendation. And I've even had it this way where the judge says, yes, I'll go along with that. But then we get in court and the judge hears something and changes his mind and says, look, I know what I told you, but I'm changing my mind. This guy's going to jail. So there was a recommendation. The judge didn't have to follow it in Ohio. There's other states where they do. And there's certain binding recommendations. But in Ohio, judges don't have to follow it and it can all fall apart, which is why before the plea, I have this conversation with my client. I say, look, we have a recommendation. It's right here in black and white, but this is only a recommendation. The final decision is up to the judge, and the judge has every right to turn this down and do what he or she wants to do with the case. And this can happen even if I got input from the judge in advance. Let's talk about that for a second. There are a lot of times where a lot of courts where I can go into the hearing, or the judge has been intimately involved with the case all the way through. We've had two or three pretrial conferences. Sometimes we do that in chambers, back at his desk or in the jury room, wherever it would be, or even in open court. And the judge says, yeah, I hear you. That makes sense to me. I'll go along with that recommendation. Other judges will say, sorry, I don't promise or get involved in any of this. I reserve the right to impose whatever sentence I want. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do in advance. This is where it gets dicey for people. In other words, somebody says, look, I'm pleading guilty. I could get 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. What's the judge going to do? All right, here's where attorneys get in trouble. Or not trouble, but here's where things can get wishy-washy. Lawyer says, look, I've been in front of Judge X for the last 20 years. I've pled hundreds of cases in front of Judge X. I've practiced in this town my entire career. I've never seen Judge X do more than this on the type of case that you have. But he could do more. Now, that's what we're saying as lawyers. But when a client is sitting there listening to that, the client is only hearing the judge is going to give me probation because that's what he's always done. And I'm not saying the clients are, wrong or inattentive. I just think that a lot of times there's this deer in the headlights where, you know, there's fear, there's emotion, there's stress. They're hearing what they want to hear, the best case scenario. I spend a lot of time trying to have these conversations well before the day of the plea to say, look, I don't know what the judge is going to do. I can tell you what I think he's going to do, but I don't know. And we have to go into this. We have to go appear, do this plea, sign this plea agreement with the presupposition that he's not or that he may not. And we have to be okay with it when he doesn't. We just don't know. And now, there are times where I have to stress that more than others based on who my client is and the history of the case, based on who the judge is and the history of the case. You know, it all depends. Sometimes I'm more confident than others what a judge will do. Sometimes I just flat out don't know. And I will admit, I have been caught twice in my career flat-footed when a judge in advance agreed with what we were recommending, told me what he was going to do in advance, and then changed it in real time on the record when I stood up to do the plea. And it happens. Twice in my career it's happened. There are ways to handle that. There are ways to deal with it. But it definitely is off-putting, and that has changed how I talk to clients. Now I say, listen, I even tell clients those two examples and say, this has happened. And I'm not trying to talk my client out of it necessarily, but he has to do it knowingly, and he has to do it intelligently, and he has to do it voluntarily, meaning he understands what's going on. After we have these discussions, we talk about the constitutional side of it. Whenever you enter a plea of guilty, or no contest, or whatever it is, in a case, you have to understand what your rights are. You have to understand that you're waiving your rights. You have to understand those two components. What are your rights? So, look, boring as it may be, this is interesting stuff. This is like a first, this is like a senior government class. I wish they taught this stuff in government. They probably don't anymore. We have this thing at the beginning of our Constitution called the Bill of Rights. And in the Bill of Rights, it sort of outlines all the stuff that can that has to happen or what your rights are in a criminal setting. And they've sort of evolved into this discussion that happens when people enter a guilty plea. You have a right to a jury trial. If the case is one that can put you in jail, you have a right to a jury trial. That means trial by jury. In Ohio, on misdemeanors, that means you have 8 jurors. In felonies, you have 12. And you have a right at that trial to be presumed innocent. This is called the presumption of innocence. So right to a jury, the Sixth Amendment is going to pick up a lot of these. So your right to trial by jury is, you can find it, just open up your, pull out your pocket constitution, turn it to the first section of the Bill of Rights, and you're going to find under the Sixth Amendment a right to trial by jury. At that trial, you have a right to be presumed innocent, the presumption of innocence. This is sort of one of these due process rights that applies to the states. You have a right at the trial to remain silent. In other words, you don't have to testify. The judge, the prosecutor, nobody can say, all right, Mr. Smith, you're charged with a crime. Climb on up on that witness stand and talk to us about what happened. They can't force you to do that. You can guess what that one is. That's your Fifth Amendment right. And instead, you can remain silent. And you can say, screw you, prosecutor. You proved me guilty beyond a reasonable doubt at my jury trial. There are other rights that happen at that jury trial, other things that will, how it unfolds in a constitutional way. You have a right at that trial to cross-examine witnesses. That's called the right of confrontation. Again, pull out the Sixth Amendment, read it, you'll see it. You have a right to confront your accusers in an open and public trial. You have a right to an open trial, and you have a right to confront your accusers, or we call that cross-examination. As you've heard me say here before, the greatest legal engine ever discovered or ever invented for the discovery of the truth is your right of confrontation, meaning the prosecutor calls its witnesses. Say Officer Flanagan, he comes up, it's a DUI case, and he tells this tale of woe about, oh yeah, I pulled your client over and he was wasted, he was this, he was that. I get to stand up and I get to ask him questions, and almost universally I'm asking questions the prosecutor didn't. Almost universally I'm asking questions that help my client. Almost universally I'm bringing out evidence that helps establish the defense. Because why in the adversarial system that we have would we expect Officer Flanagan to say the good stuff for us? We don't. Our system incorporates that into it, and it's called the right of confrontation. But it doesn't stop there. We also have something called the right of compulsory process. Fancy talk for saying we get to use a subpoena to drag a witness into court and testify. We can't force that witness to say what we want that witness to say, but in theory, if we've got a witness out there, your neighbor who saw it, your best friend who was with you, whatever, Or even a lot of times it's a government entity that has documents that are relevant. I subpoena the person in charge of that, say, bring with you some documents that are going to be helpful to my case. It's called the right of compulsory process. If that person doesn't show up, in theory, I can use the court power to drag that person into court in cuffs. I can't make that person say what I want when they get there, but I can drag them into court. Sometimes they take the Fifth Amendment when they testify. Sometimes they don't say what we want, or they change their story completely, and we can argue about that, but I have that right of compulsory process. And I go even further when my colloquy of rights, when I talk to my clients about their pleas, I talk about what happens at trial. During trial, I would be objecting. I would say, objection, they can't do that. Or maybe before trial, I filed a motion to suppress. I said, look, judge, they're not allowed to use this evidence because they entered my client's house, or they stopped my client's car, or they searched his backpack, or they went through his, they rumbled through his stuff, and they didn't have a warrant, and that violated the Fourth Amendment. And the judge before trial denied it and said, sorry, Charlie, we're letting that evidence in, no Fourth Amendment problem. And then I get to trial, and somebody's talking about hearsay, and I'm screaming and yelling. I'm howling at the moon. They can't do this. They can't do this. Judge says, sort of like My Cousin Vinny, that is a coherent, well thought out, whatever objection, overruled. Yeah, you lose the objection. After trial, if you've lost the trial, you have a right to appeal. And this is called a direct appeal as a right here in Ohio. And we can appeal directly to the Court of Appeals. So in sum, you're giving up your right to trial by jury. You're giving up your right to be presumed innocent. You're giving up your right to force the prosecutor to prove you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt at that trial, where you can't be forced to testify against yourself. You're giving up your right of confrontation during trial to actually cross-examine or have your lawyer cross-examine your accusers. You're giving your right of giving up your right of compulsory process and your right to appeal. And I forgot a big one, but it's sort of implicit. You have a right to an attorney to represent you at trial. And the reason I forget about it a lot is because I am the lawyer talking to my client. Now, what does all this mean? Back to what we're talking about. This long, boring discussion you have, when you stand up to do a plea, there has to be a meaningful dialogue between you and the judge about these rights, about what the possible punishment is, what the maximum possible punishment is, what the terms of the deal are, and an understanding that you're giving up all these rights, that you're not going to have a trial, that you're not going to do all these things that we talked about, and I can send you to jail and don't pass go and off you go. And there are other details to it, but the point of me telling you this is people don't understand this. And I think we do our clients a disservice at times when at the last minute, and it happens, sometimes it's just part and parcel with what's going on in the nature of our line of work. Sometimes at the last minute, we get a deal and we're just stuck going through this. And often, I'll say this, judges and prosecutors are often, they don't have any sympathy and no patience for the time it takes for me to have this discussion with my client. They give me a plea bargain on paper and I'm expected to drag my client in 2 minutes later and do the plea. But I get knocks on the conference, hey, are you ready? Is you guys ready? The judge is on a bench and blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, listen, my guy's giving up his right to a trial. We're ready for jury trial today and we're going to resolve it. Give me 15 freaking minutes at least, because this is important stuff. And I try to avoid that as much as I can, because when you go into a courtroom for the first time, you've never been there, and you stand up in front of a judge and you start talking, we've all been there. Like anybody who's done a public speech knows what that's like. Your vision narrows, your heart rate increases, the adrenaline starts rushing, and you just start answering. And I've had so many clients tell me, I just pled guilty. I didn't even really understand what was going on. I barely remember it. And courts of appeal later will say, look, the guy said he understood. What else can we ask? So there's two things are true, I think. One, the client didn't understand, or the defendant didn't understand what was going on because this was all happening so fast and he sort of freaked out and had this panic adrenaline rush. And two, he said that he did understand because it's on the record with this meaningful dialogue. I'm not saying that there's a better way, but I am. The better way is if you have the opportunity, and let's say it on both ways. If you're a lawyer and you're not having these discussions with your client the day or two before, or even the week before, going in when you know it's going to be a plea and you're doing your client a disservice. And if you're on the other side, if you're a client, your lawyer is saying, look, you got to plead guilty, ask him or her, ask your attorney what that's going to be like, what it's going to feel like, what it's going to look like. And I think I can often make people feel better about it because I can say, look, here's what's going to happen. Remember we were in that courtroom for the pretrial or for this other hearing? We're going to be standing at that very table. We're going to go in, and this judge likes us to stand. So we're going to be standing, and we're going to be facing the judge. The prosecutor is going to go first, and the prosecutor is going to say, look, judge, here are the terms of the deal, and spell it all out. The judge is going to then turn to us. Is that what the terms of the deal are? Yes. Mr. Client, do you understand all that? Yes. All right, then it's going to go back to the prosecutor. Prosecutor is going to read a bunch of facts into the record about the case because those are the facts that the judge needs to find somebody guilty. Judge is going to turn back to us. Counsel, have you heard those facts? Oh, I've heard them. Yep. Do you have any objection? Not for purposes of the plea, or maybe I do. Maybe I want to say, judge, I just want to add one thing. Maybe we had a valid self-defense claim, we thought, but we're not going to do that. You know, whatever it is, we may or may not want to add facts. But again, Mr. Client, do you understand what your lawyer has said here, that those are the facts? Yes. Sometimes judges will even put clients under oath there and make the client tell them what the facts are. And if you're a lawyer and you have not prepared your client for that, I assure you that that gets really awkward really fast and very difficult for the client, and it's not fair to the client. Then the judge will say, okay, well, look, I'm going to go through your constitutional rights and have a discussion with you, Mr. Client. And then the judge is going to go through all this stuff we just talked about. After that, the prosecutor, if there's going to be a sentencing hearing right away, the prosecutor will give his spiel. I'll give my spiel. The judge will impose sentence. Sometimes it gets continued for a sentence. That's another discussion. Anyway, I get it. This probably isn't the most exciting topic, but it's important. If you're in that situation, it's important that you understand it. If you've got a question about it, if you've been through a plea colloquy and you want to talk about that, give us the facts in the comments. I love reading about this stuff. And if you're an attorney, do better if you're not doing this stuff. Me too, right? We all do it. I try to do the best I can to make sure my clients know what's going on, because then it's just that they know what's going on. All right. Lawyer talk off the record, on the air till now. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.